Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend's edition, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. Be sure to check out our website and podcast to keep up to date with all of our daily market commentary, as well as our continued company updates. Just trying to keep everybody as up to date as we can on these markets, as we, well, are going through a bit of a bounce this week, which is, I think, a welcome reprieve from the constant stair-stepping lower pattern that we have seen in the markets pretty much across the board throughout this year. The biggest question being, is this going to be more than a bear market rally? We are kicking off the show with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. That's read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. On the retail and individual side, Rick writes in the No Trader and just started a piece called 7-Eleven that picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the underlying S&P. Rick, let's start with kind of what I said on the onset there, is that this week, at least so far, we are recording this halfway through the day on Wednesday, the market has been bouncing all week, moving higher. It started at the tail end of last week on Friday. Rick, is this anything more than a bear market rally in your eyes?
I think it's still a bear market rally, Corey and Shad. It may have some more to go, but in the scheme of things, I think 2023 is going to be problematic for the markets, probably the first half of the year, where I wouldn't expect any material increase in price. Certainly not a test of all-time highs or anything like that that the bulls are calling for. So I look at this as probably a good solid trading bounce, but something that ultimately I'm still going to be looking to sell into. And just as far as like levels, I'd say with the S&P trading at 38.75, again, we're midweek, but I would think that the two kind of big levels I'd look at right now are 39.08, and then north of 4,100. So we'll call it anywhere from 4,100 to 4,150 or so, I think is going to be tough going beyond there. And if we get the chance, anything near 4,150 to sell, I will, and likely dramatically lighten up long exposure again. That we actually got suggested to our clients the day after the low was made, I guess, what, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks ago or so, we turned bullish again, and we've been writing that and said that through elections, I expect a rally going into elections, and we'll have to see what comes of elections and how much or how not much Republicans pick up. You know, my best guess would be is that the Senate stays Democrat, the House turns Republican. It's certainly going to make it tougher for Biden going forward to get stuff done. So I just don't see the explosive market the way the bulls love to continually say that we're going to see.
Yeah, Rick, that's a good point that we probably will rally into these elections. And it also has been helped a little bit by the Fed jawboning that they may slow down the pace of their rate hikes, at least from the 75s to the 50 basis point in December and maybe 25 first quarter next year. That was a contributing factor, as well as the dollar rolling over a little bit. But when you look at these targets like that 41.48 in the S&P, would you consider shorting it there? And are you concerned that the S&P and the NASDAQ both made lower lows than their June lows just back in September?
I'm not concerned much about the lower lows, because when you look at how much lower and where those weeks closed out. So if the June low was, what, 36.37, if I recall, in the S&P, and then we got down to 34.92, but we closed that week at 35.83. So it's, you know, it's a little over a percent lower and we're above. I'm not concerned about it being lower lows. That looked like it was the flush out, and most likely in Elliott wave terms, probably the low of what we'll call it wave 3 of wave 3, down off of the all-time highs. So, you know, this is now, we're in wave 3, but let's call this wave 4 within wave 3. So smaller wave 4 within wave 3. So I think that it's still a rally to be sold into. And not that I'm such an Elliott guy, but when I look at all the stuff I do, let's just say that I don't think the Fed has really changed their tune. And I think I said it to you guys last month when we spoke that Chairman Powell made it very clear what needs to be done and the extent to which things will be done until, quote, the job gets done. And that means higher interest rates for a long period of time. And the thought that they're going to reduce what they plan to do or kind of take it easy, take their foot off the pedal, I don't think so. You can make an argument that they haven't done close to what they need to do to really materially impact inflation. And therefore, I know the bulls love to see and sense out any sense that they could be taking their foot off the pedal, that the Fed was taking their foot off the pedal. But I think the Jackson Hole statement from Jay Powell could not have been more clear. And it would not be in the Fed's best interest at all to start kind of taking back any of what that statement is. So I think bulls love to see what bulls, you know, they want to see what they want to see. They have confirmation bias. They look for bullish news. They disregard bearish news. Everybody says it's all priced in the market. It's not priced in the market. It's not priced in on the institutional side, and it's definitely not priced in on the individual investor side. So, yes, we can rally, and I expect we could, you know, get back up into that 4,000 neighborhood. You're first going to have, as I said, some resistance even this week at 3908. So, it's only 30 points away from where we're currently trading at this time. But even if we get through there and we do get above 4,000, I don't think we'd likely take out that August high of, 43.25. I'd still say we're in a downtrend and we've made lower lows and lower highs. And you'd have to take out that 43.25 level to even get any sense that we're not still in a downtrend.
Okay, that's pretty clear there, Rick. I think still very much in this downtrend. And you are right. A lot of people out there grasping for reasons to be bullish in a wide range of markets. What do you have to say to those bulls that are saying, well, look at some of these other central banks, the Bank of Japan, Bank of England, even this week, the Bank of Canada that hiked a little less than expected. Again, they're looking for something to be bullish about, but they are pointing to some of these other central banks that have, I guess, eased back a little bit from their hawkishness.
All right, so let's look at this. If the central banks have eased off a bit, and of course the U.S. hasn't yet, but if other central banks have eased off a bit, one would think that their economies are in pretty bad shape, that they have to ease off just how much they're raising rates. So you can look at that as a near-term catalyst, and I won't argue with you, but in the bigger picture, that doesn't change the point that there's a lot of trouble ahead. And best case scenario to me is we get somewhere north of 4,000. We don't likely take out the 43.25 high from August, and it turns into a sell again. That's the way I'm looking at it, because I try to look at both sides of the market. I don't have a bigger bearish view just because I feel like it. I'm going to stick to it. I have my reasons and my data to suggest that, one of which is that earnings revisions have not fallen nearly as much. And it would not surprise me, although it would certainly surprise the bulls because they don't even want to think this way, but it wouldn't surprise me if forward earnings in the S&P get lower to under 200. And that's, you know, most people are thinking, all right, maybe they pulled down to 210, 220. And I think that that's, again, kind of just a bullish bias rather than more of the reality and the likelihood that earnings revisions really need to come quite a bit lower still.
Rick, just talking about the earnings season, it hasn't so far been quite as dramatic as many were postulating it would be. Many people and even many companies messaged there was going to be weakness. Now, we do have some of the big mega caps to report this week on Thursday and Friday. Are you going to be more interested in their forward guidance? Because I think a lot of people already have figured out how things are going to shake up for Q3. Or what's your main takeaway from this earnings season?
Well, I think that, you know, the mega caps, and we already saw this with Microsoft and Alphabet, and it would not surprise me if Apple also has issues in their forthcoming report on Thursday because of what has been significant dollar strength. And I think these global mega cap companies are going to be hurt by the dollar strength that we've seen for the whole year. And it wouldn't surprise me if these numbers come in lower. And therefore, and plus forward guidance. So when you combine those two things, I think that one's got to look really closely at what Apple's figures are, because it would not surprise me if they come in worse than expected, especially because of you know, currency. And you think about how much of their business is global. So dollar strength is really going to hurt them. And these large cap names are the biggest pieces of the S&P, any cap weighted index. So we've got to be able to see, look, they held up the longest and then finally kind of broke over, you know, the spring and into the summer. And they're going to have some trouble recovering too. So these rallies, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing I see that makes me think that any of these mega cap names are headed back to their highs. So to me, I still think there's potentially a whole nother leg coming next year in the downside.
So then again, still that generally bearish outlook for these markets. Since you mentioned currencies, let's talk about the US dollar, because the dollar this week starting to move lower. As we're recording this, the dollar just broke below that 110 level, testing out the lows from earlier this month. And I think even more importantly, looking at the monthly chart, looks like the dollar is going to have a negative month this month. That's only going to be, I think, the second negative month in almost a year. 11 months, we'll have only two down months. The last one was in May. Rick, any significance to the potential rollover in the dollar here? Do you think the dollar has rolled over?
I'm going to say short term, yes. We've actually played this very well. We got out of dollar longs at 112 and somewhere right around 112.60. We've been neutral for the last few weeks. And I said that if we break under 111.33, I wrote that in our institutional report this past weekend. So I was focusing on 111.33. And if we broke underneath that, you opened the door for a move to just under 108 to probably about 105.5. Has the whole dollar rally ended? Probably not. Short term, yes. Extended. And what you're really seeing, if you look at the dollar, if you look at bonds, if you look at stocks, you have three ways to play essentially the same move. You know, you can technically be selling the dollar, buying bonds, or buying stocks. They're all near-term moves that are counter-trend to what we've seen the whole year. So it's, again, it's really all the same trade. The correlation is very high between these three markets. And, you know, the dollar weakness now and the fact that we took out the low from a few weeks ago should get some more computerized systems, especially if we close out the week under the low from 3 weeks ago. You're going to see more selling down to, again, 108 to about 105.5. At that point, I reevaluate, and I think whether or not there's going to be much more to the downside or not.
Yeah, it really has been kind of one universal market where it seems like it's a teeter-totter, Rick. On one side, you know, you have commodities and you have the general equities and the crypto space. On the other side, you have the dollar and interest rates. And we have seen the interest rates pull back a little bit after hitting a peak recently. Currently, the 10-year's at 4.007 and the 2-year still higher than the 10-year at 4.4018. What's your takeaway from the bond market here? Are you interested in potentially bonds doing a little bit better than they have? And what's your outlook?
Yeah, so the bond market, again, our institutional report that went out Sunday night, I suggested buying bonds on Monday. I turned bullish this week. Certainly for a tactical play, I'm not looking for this to be, you know, a huge move. With an initial target of 3.94%, and then we'll see if in the next week or two, you know, depending upon how we trade against 3.94, then you could open the door if you break underneath that and how you break underneath it. You could open the door for move all the way down to, let's call it 3.55, something like that. So short term, yields have peaked the same way stocks have bottomed and the dollar has peaked, and they're all moving, you know, in tandem, either the same direction or inversely, a very high correlation. So bonds, you know, my being bullish bonds is kind of in line with me being bearish the dollar and bullish stocks all on a short term basis.
Rick, what is this environment where everything is, for the most part, moving together? I understand that when investors have gotten scared over this last year, they've plowed into the dollar, and that's pretty much been the only safe haven trade. But when any risk has come back into their mind, a risk on attitude, everything else has moved higher. What is this environment when you compare it historically to past markets?
I think we've seen this before. It's not that infrequent that we get a high correlation. And, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about that the stock market is a market of stocks. But I think, and we've seen it for the good amount of, I mean, if look, put it this way, we've been selling off since January 1st. What's the dollar been doing since January 1st? Gone straight up. What have interest rates done since January 1st? Gone straight up. So let's forget the last 2 weeks. You have these perfect correlations, again, either exactly inverse or exactly together. And we've seen this happen many times over the years. I'm on Wall Street now over 41 years. And there's plenty of times that you get all these markets moving together. You've got, you know, part of the influence of this year is the Fed. And the more they've raised rates and the marketplace understood that that was what was going to happen, it made sense that stocks were not the place to be after all these years of easy money in the system. So go back to 2008, 2009, and all the money that the Fed put in to fuel the markets, and then go back to just 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago with COVID, where they had to do a tremendous influx again. And this was, of course, done in coordination globally with the central banks because the global economy absolutely fell apart because of COVID. So it's not a stretch to think that once the inflation got out of control and the Fed says we finally, you know, we've kind of messed up, we need to get a grip on inflation and there isn't going to be easy money in the system anymore. It wasn't, at least to me, a hard stretch to think of this market's, you know, going to take on a different flavor. At the very least, it's not like 2021 where you just bought and never had a 5% decline to face during the year. It stopped being a one-way market and at least opened up to a two-way market. And case in point is that we've been bearish for the bulk of the year. We bought in early July. We kicked it out at 4270 and above in the S&P for a bearish move again. And then we just went, you know, bullish the day after the lows of this year were made. So it's a two-sided market. If you're tactical and you have the right tools and ability to see what's coming forward, you know, you can play these moves. But the bigger picture that investors have to deal with going forward is the massive inflation. a Fed who's no longer supporting the markets with easy money, and, you know, potentially some tough times ahead. When the Fed chairman says that individuals and businesses are going to feel some pain, why would you try to look past that and say, oh, but the economy's doing fine and this number came out fine? Go back to the old thing. Don't fight the Fed. And this is a major shift after years of easy money going back to the Great Financial Crisis. So, you know, 13 years of easy money. Why is it such a stretch to think that, you know, the market could have come off this year from, we've already gone from 4,800 to, let's call it 3,500. Why? I mean, that's certainly a decent give back to the COVID rally that started at, you know, the COVID low was 2,200. So the market more than doubled in 2 years. Why can't we give it a decent chunk back, given the fact that we've got to face and deal with the issues that have come out from all this easy money? It's like, to me, it's just not a hard stretch to think logically that way, instead of getting so stuck on some type of preconceived notion of what the market has to do. Pay attention to the big overriding news. It's a tight Fed. It's tight central banks. It doesn't mean there aren't rallies, but there's no reason to think this is going to turn around and go trade over 4,800. Not in the near term.
That's a good point, Rick. And there was markets that were at valuations many people had not seen, PE ratios people hadn't seen. And I think a key point that keeps getting glossed over is that the Fed also tapered down and stopped their bond buying purchases. So it's really not a surprise that the bond markets had some weakness. But there is one flavor that's a little different, Rick, and that is, you know, if you look back just over the last 6-7 decades, we haven't ever seen bonds underperform the general equities as bad as they have recently. I think they were down at one point 35% this year, where the stocks, like maybe the S&P, was down about 25%. Used to be that bonds were the safe haven, like the dollar has been, and that people went there during turbulence. And sure, they may have pulled back a little bit during periods of weakness in the stocks, but they generally held up better. What do you make of that kind of sea change in the bond market versus the equity market and the traditional thinking as far as bonds being a safe haven?
Well, I think you have to put it in context of, number one is, did you have an opinion at the time that U.S. 10-year yields would get negative the way so many other countries had? And I was always in the camp that we were not going to go negative. So we got down to, what, 40 basis points a few years ago, and have slowly moved higher until this year when they've dramatically moved higher. The safety, that aspect from the bonds, makes sense, but not when you're getting 1% or 1.5%. If you could lock up the short end of that and easily trade out, that's one thing. But, you know, was there ever a point in time I ever considered buying bonds to hold as an investment when yields were up sub 2%? And the answer is no. Not once did I ever think of doing that. Does a pension fund need to do that? Yes. Are there certain companies, insurance companies, that need to because they have to know their cash flow in the future? Yes. But in the scheme of things, there's no reason to be owning a 10-year bond at 2%, 1.5%, 1%, or 50 bips. And when you think of where bonds were, the yields in 1980, and that we had a 40-year bull market in bonds, and how much money you made in bonds last year, again, from price appreciation, it's not hard to figure out that you're going to have price depreciation and that the safety of being in a U.S. bond gets greatly reduced in the sense of making money from it. Is it still essentially the safest thing out there? Yes. As assured as you can be in an industry that has no assurances, buying a U.S. Treasury bill, note, or bond is the closest thing you're going to have to a guarantee that you're going to get your money back. But as an investment to make money on, like you have for the last 40 years, where you made both the yield and the appreciation in the bond itself, that's gone. And until yields get up to a point, even look, if at 4%, you can start saying, yeah, there is some alternative. A guaranteed 4% is a very different story for an investor than a guaranteed, 100 basis points. Now, it's still not matching inflation. So if you lock your money up at 4% for 10 years, you're certainly trailing and losing money until inflation does erode your interest. But to be guaranteed to have a place to put money that you know you're going to get it back, the safety of the U.S. bond market is still there. But the likelihood you're going to make money on that is a different story. So you have to think of the bonds as both making money in the bond market versus guaranteeing that your money will be there. And it's two elements to investing in the bond market. So you got to remember both sides of that. Corey, I've been telling people for a long time, you're going to lose money buying bonds. For the last couple of years, it just to me, that was my approach. You're not going to do well locking your money in at 1% and 2%. You're going to lose money.
Well, it's more attractive now at higher rates. That also brings up the question, what yield are investors looking for? Because there are actually some still decent yielding markets or sectors out there, especially in the energy sector. Let's talk quickly energy, your outlook for oil. I was just at an energy conference last weekend, and boy, oh boy, these companies are generating some great cash flow. Arguably, they're still a little bit unloved, unfortunately. What's your outlook, especially when it comes to the oil price here that is now back to approaching $90 a barrel?
So to me, barring an exogenous event for the oil market, right? Something that we can't anticipate, something that happens with Ukraine or Russia or, geopolitics. But if we just look at kind of supply and demand and what I see, I think that oil probably gets a top between, I'll call it the mid to high 90s to maybe 105, somewhere in that $10 range. I don't see oil going back to the highs right now. I mean, it has a clear double top, let's call it this year, over 120 bucks a barrel. We sold down to, I guess it's about a year ago or so, where we kind of the high 70s, low 80s area, mid 80s, where we had peaked and sold down to. So, we've made a normal correction, and I can make the case that we're going to get another leg higher. But when I think about just general rules of investing, trading, and seeing how many people are theoretically trapped north of, we'll call it 100 bucks, I would think there's a decent lid in oil going forward. So as best as I can say, going out 6 months, we're not going to get above, let's call it 105.
Well, Rick, I guess one other area of the commodities we should cover is with the weaker dollar. What's your outlook on the metals? Seems like a lot of the base metals have popped, copper, nickel, zinc. We've had silver up a little bit on this weaker dollar. And then gold has had a little life, but is still in the hurt locker. What's your outlook on the metals?
Yeah, so gold's been the tough one because, we all know that just about 1675 in front month COMEX gold has been multiple lows for the last 2 years. There were six touches to that level. So that when a month ago when it broke, I wrote that, be careful, this could fall fast and hard. And the week that it broke beneath that level, it really didn't sell off. After you break a level that's held that many times, if it gets breached, it should sell off and it should sell hard and fast. And it didn't. So right away I said, this isn't doing what I anticipated it to do. You need to have a neutral view because it can't necessarily be bullish, but this isn't acting bearishly the way it should. When you have 2 years of longs trapped and a horizontal level that traded six times breaks, it should crack, and it didn't. And in fact, last week, commercials, for the commitment traders report, you have commercials and large speculators and small speculators, and the commercials are considered smart money. Commercials added 18,000 contracts on the long side last week. So they are continually buying against some hedge fund selling. And with the dollar pulling back here, gold could surprise and move to the upside. So I give a little better chance that can happen just simply because the dollar breaking should be good for gold. And those who sold out, if they don't, you know, kind of immediately come back in, they're either got out of trades they've held for a long time or they're going to incur some losses. We were one of the places that I'm a strategist for. We were short silver, and we covered this week, again, anticipating dollar weakness in that, you know, the unlikelihood that silver was going to keep trading down, just also watching what gold was doing. So I'm kind of neutral in here. I can't say I'm bullish. I give the slight edge to the bull simply because gold hasn't cracked. But it's a tough one here, and a lot of people are trapped higher, so it's going to mute any rally too.
Okay. Rick, very interesting comments. We do appreciate you jumping around market to market with us, and as encouraged as I think anybody wants to be in any sector, still seems like there is a lot of work to do to truly turn the script to more of a bullish outlook. But there are trading rallies that happen in all markets, in all bear markets as well. And quite frankly, it looks like we are still going through something like that, especially as the dollar continues to pull back. Rick, as always, great having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking time with us. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You too. Thanks, gentlemen.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.